guys, it's November the 26th. Welcome to another episode of We Are Curious. My name is Ali Mwakaneno. I'm here to bring you all the good news and, as usual, some bad news that happened this week. I am joined by...
the one, the only, Hamisi Rollins, co-founder Culture Capture.
And myself here, Felix Ucheng, your analyst here at Hisa Technologies.
That's right. Before we start, guys, how has your week been? Mekwaje.
Mine was hectic. I'm still a student. So, this is Cuts Week.
Wait, you call yourself what? Co-founder, Culture Capture.
Yeah, co-founder or lead catalyst.
Right.
So, this week, mostly school, catching up. Because I had cuts, so I had to like catch up with the syllabus and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then in terms of work, I have software development at MediaPal, and we have a few issues. We have to catch up on those. So yeah, that's pretty much been it. It's been hectic, but we're here. It's Friday, so we made it.
Yeah, how about you, Felix? How was your week?
My week has been awesome. First of all, guys, SpaceX launched, we have the, I think Elon said we are avenging the dinosaurs. So, yeah, we are looking at an anti-meteorite defense technology where we no longer let meteorites get into the Earth's atmosphere. We blow them off before they get even close to us.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that was pretty much about my week. It was an awesome one for me. We're seeing SpaceX, and then also another thing is, I think it's all about space. Will that be interesting?
I mean, if it was interesting for you, that's your thing. My week has been mixed. First of all, we have the Kenjin drama going on.
Oh my God.
A lot of Kenjin drama going on. I was excited that Uber is entering the cannabis market. Disclaimer, it's not going to be in Kenya, so no disclaimer for me. What else? I heard that M-Pesa is bringing ads to the app, and for me that felt iffy. But otherwise, it's been an alright week.
What does iffy mean?
Felix.
I was iffy sounds like effy.
No. Iffy has nothing to do with effy. Iffy is more of unsettling.
Okay, sounds iffy to me.
Yeah, so that was it. Anyway. A couple of good things that happened. Well, a couple of things that we're going to talk about in today's podcast, of course. First things first, we have news on the Competition Authority of Kenya and what's happening around mortgage and mortgage charges. Then we'll dive in a little bit, or maybe a little bit, depending on how Felix feels, into the Kenjin drama. Touch onto something good. I feel like the High Court has been on a roll. You know, it's been High Court versus KRA.
Let's just say, like, courts within this country have been on some other steroids.
Right?
I don't know.
Yeah, I like what they did with exercise duties. Mm-hmm. And then four, of course, we have the partnership between KQ and South Africa Airways.
Oh yeah, the two dead guys. Okay, just sorry.
Felix, I still intend to fly, and unfortunately, that's one of the flights outside this country. So can we please maintain a cordial relationship with these guys?
Okay.
Right.
Come on, but you can fly with a lot of other guys who are actually way cheaper than KQ. And by the way, you're talking about airlines. We should also remember that Air Tanzania actually began flying the daily flights back to Nairobi.
After like 20 years, man.
Yeah, and Air Tanzania is way cheaper than KQ.
You know, some people were not even born the time Tanzania stopped flying into Kenya.
Yeah, exactly. So sad.
Yeah, so that's going to be...
Ali, I think one of these days we should do a podcast about business wars between KQ, the East African aviation industry,
mm-hmm.
and how KQ panned out. And then you bring in... You know, in the last episode, you're bringing in Ethiopian Airlines.
I don't think we can call it business wars in that. We might have to get a better name.
Airline was something like that.
East African Titans would be a good name.
We could actually start something like that and just see. You know, look at KCB Equity, you look at KQ, you look at Kenjin, KPLC.
There actually is a podcast coming up about that, and it's from one of the members of the team.
Yeah.
But let's hold that thought.
Yeah.
Let's dive into this.
Yeah.
Felix,
mm-hmm.
first things first. What's happening with Kenjin?
Alright guys, so now one of the things that we are having here with Kenjin, In case you're wondering, guys, about a month ago, Kenjin, which is the country's major electricity generator or electricity producer, if we can call it that, released the financial results for the full year 2021. That was the full year that ended in June. And now what we're seeing here is that over time, you know, we are seeing here that the, after a few days, so what usually happens, guys, is all these companies must go through auditing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Auditor General came in and gave qualified opinion. You know how that qualified opinion usually stands out whenever an audit report comes out? And for time, we've been seeing companies like Kenya Power, for example, have been having a lot of stuff about unqualified opinion. And then now here we're seeing there's a qualified opinion for Kenjin. And the Auditor General literally says that they are not able to, they've seen an issue within the valuation of Kenjin's properties, mostly the plant, machinery and equipment, which Kenjin hasn't been updating. So they've not been looking at, you know, stuff like plant and machinery. There's a lot that happens. First of all, they depreciate the value. So there's always the depreciation and amortization in all of this. These are factors in which Kenjin was not putting into place. And so one of the things that really comes in at this point is the Auditor General is telling Kenjin, hey, you know what? We don't know what you guys are talking about in this. In this, all this valuation, this is something that you guys are not jumping into. And then what happens next now is Kenjin comes in and tells, and this is a statement that was released by Kenjin earlier today, on Friday, 26th of November. Kenjin came and told investors that, you know, according to the case, we always do a revaluation of all our assets at the end of every 5 years. So Kenjin was literally telling guys, we are not going to do this today, but we're going to do this later. We'll be doing this. Actually, they were saying they'll be doing that this year. But you know, one of the things, guys, that comes into my to my question just for Kenjin is there are a lot of things that were in question for Kenjin. The first one, which I know a lot of shareholders have been concerned about, is Kenjin had actually mentioned, Kenjin did not inform investors that they were about a profit warning. And in case you've been following on to this keenly, guys, remember we mentioned that for a company to issue a profit warning, that technically means that the profit or the performance of the current financial year will be more than 25% of the performance of the previous financial year. So in this case, will be lower by above 25%. So in this case, we're seeing Kenjin had an opportunity to actually inform shareholders about this, but then Kenjin didn't come and they did not issue this to shareholders. And so that's literally one of the things that jumps in. And so that dropped into a bit where we're seeing non-compliance with Capital Markets Authority, the Regulations Act, that are coming in and says the company must come in and issue a profit warning. Now, in this case, we're seeing Kenjin's profit was down for the year. Actually, the revenue growth was way, way lower. But Kenjin was saying, and I'll just quote this from the statement that was released by Kenjin. Kenjin says the company's underlying business performance was strong, contributing to 7% growth in profit before tax. Profit after tax, however, declined due to reversal of the corporate tax. The corporate tax, the one that was moved from 25 to 30%, and the related restatement of the deferred tax liability. And so they were saying they're currently in engagement with the Capital Markets Authority. In my opinion, and I think this might sound as a bit of a defensive stand for Kenjin, but I really think, Ali, you know, Kenjin had an opportunity when they were announcing these financials. They had an opportunity to inform shareholders even on the very day when they were announcing the results, because we've seen companies like Transcentury and East African Cables, when they release the financials, they're giving you the financials. They release the profit warning this evening, and tomorrow morning they give you guys the financials.
So just some form of notice that comes before time.
Yeah, as long as it comes before the financials are released. So I don't really think it's just for Kenjin to say that they're now engaging regulators. Can you imagine guys who had a higher valuation for Kenjin and bought into Kenjin because they believe that the performance would have been higher? So technically for me, I think they really don't have anything onto that bit. And then another thing, the most important thing here, guys, that guys really need to see is Kenya Power actually paid Kenjin and still made a profit.
How much did they pay them? Was
52 billion.
51 billion.
Yeah. And Kenya Power made a profit. Guys, I honestly think I'm looking at Kenya Power from
previous reports by Kenjan were that one of the things that was really weighing the company down was the Kenya Power debt.
Exactly.
And I don't think, is the 52 billion the entirety of its debt?
No, it's not, but yet
it's a substantial amount.
Substantial. It's way over 80% of what Kenya Power owes Kenja.
What's the total?
I'll confirm onto that. I'll be able to give you guys that number as we proceed.
Yeah, because also another question I had is, of course, we've had a few developments with Kenjin around the continent, and this is with regards to the drilling in Ethiopia and Djibouti. Does that come into play when it comes to the auditor's report?
Yeah, is so that factored guys, in? One of the things here is Kenjin also commented about the operations in Ethiopia. And one of the things that Kenjan says is the Ethiopian office is just a branch and it's yet to be a subsidiary.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's nothing really much that is going in apart from the project that they're doing with, it's called TMGO or TGMO, something like that, TMGO. TMGO. So it's Tule Moi Geothermal Operations.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're saying that that was approved with them. Kenjan has received a tax identification number and business license in Ethiopia, and these were majorly put in so as to facilitate the operations in Ethiopia. We'll still be looking out for more information onto that. I think one of the things that we're seeing here, I think yesterday as well in the morning before all this began, Kenjan had released that they were starting the operations for the drilling operations in Djibouti. Weirdly enough, guys, earlier on in Kenjan, in the year, Kenjan actually said on 1st of June that they were to begin the same drilling which they're beginning again, which they were starting yesterday.
What do you think would have happened? Because I also noticed that news piece appeared twice in a space of like 6 months apart.
I think Kenjan was getting a lot of heat. This is my personal opinion, doesn't necessarily imply what the team at HISA thinks, but I feel Kenjan was trying to appear to kill the activity for the auditor's report, because they had sent almost a similar report up in June, right?
Mm-hmm. Right?
When they were saying that this was coming in through, but then right now we're seeing the same statement coming in. So personally for me, I think that was a PR stunt where they were trying to see if another statement would actually outdo, because they had stated that they had started drilling in Djibouti.
And I think it's quite surprising to notice this, because you can see that beforehand, in the report that produced in June,
mm-hmm.
the AG had also put them on spot for about 90 billion installed projects from 2 to 10 years ago. In that span of 2 to 10 years, there's 90 billion worth of projects that are stalled.
Felix,
guys, you know, I feel like
energy company on the NSE that you were rooting for.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, I believe I have been blinded by Kenjan for a very long time, until a point when right now you're trying to see on the various valuation metrics,
mm-hmm.
and then you feel like, oh my God, it's been bad. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something that's scary, because I honestly feel that this is a company that has probably been playing a lot in terms of PR, and it's now a point. Because I don't know, Rollins, can you imagine close to 90 billion worth of stalled projects? So technically,
and they're still going around drilling,
yeah.
giving PR that they're now starting new projects.
No, it's a huge joke. I personally feel that they can be able to do better, at least for now, because in May 20, actually on May 23rd, Kenjan said they were starting the project in a town called Galalekoma in Djibouti.
Djibouti.
Yeah.
They're really spreading wings.
Yeah. So I mean, what would really happen? Because why did this take long? On May, Kenjan said they were to pick this, and now they have stalled project. I don't know about you. I don't know about everybody else who's listening, or for various analysts out there on the market. But I think we're starting to see a lot of questions that are coming in with Kenjan. And this might just turn out to be a rabbit hole.
Are you concerned as an investor?
Definitely I am.
You have to be. I think the AG pointed out that for some of the projects, they're done, but there's no profitability coming from this project.
Mm-hmm.
So like there's 592 million that went into a Meru wind farm, and that was in 2012. So 10 years on, they're still seeing the numbers are not quite good enough for the books. So looking at it, it's really tricky for you as an investor if you're going to try out for something like Kengen.
I wonder, but then, Felix, just as we close on this matter, Kengen released a statement, yes?
Mm-hmm.
They reacted to the auditor's remarks, or rather to the media statements, depending on how you want to look at this.
Mm-hmm.
What was some of their, you know, rationale or their explanations? I'm avoiding the word defense.
No, Ali, I think just as I mentioned, the first thing that Kengen said is that the non-valuation of the property and plant and equipment, they say that they usually do that in after every 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't do that in 2020 because of COVID. I mean, I really don't know if
I
that's
don't know.
Something. Yeah.
I mean, COVID has been one of those things that many companies have gotten away with.
Exactly. So they're really saying they didn't do that because of COVID, you know, the travel restrictions and everything else. But guys, really, Kengen? I don't know. It's like Kenya Power saying that we couldn't get electricity because of COVID. Yeah, that's a huge problem. Okay. Another thing they said is for the capital work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
They said that the various energy projects, mostly in the geothermal infrastructure, require significant lead time. And so they say that the company has invested in significant geothermal wells that will provide steam for upcoming geothermal projects. And they've said that they're just looking a lot in terms of commissioning this and assigning some of these drilled opportunities to various projects. On amounts due from KPLC, just as we mentioned earlier on, KPLC paid Ken 15 billion. They also talked about
51 billion.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, which actually it's more than, because it's 51 billion, including taxes to cover for both debt and current bills. So I don't know. I feel like I'm so proud of Kenya Power. Like, never been proud of Kenya Power. Never. Like, Ali, we've been in this show with you, I think, for a very long time, and I've never talked about Kenya Power on the positive side, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Kenya Power is the Uganda of stocks listed on the NSE, and now. I don't know, guys. It's
you had to find a way to drag Uganda here, didn't you?
These guys in Uganda, by the way, are going to talk about the MTN IPO. Just to tell
which,
you guys.
Which closed on Monday.
Yeah, on Monday.
Okay. First things first, now that we're here, the MTN Uganda IPO closed on Monday, and there was a lot of... there's no way of saying this nicely. There was a lot of media fanfare in Kenya with regards to the IPO, and it was hyped in various channels, including, you know, channels that I don't necessarily agree with as sources of news, but here we are. How do you feel about this? From where I sit, us being one of the channels that talked about the MTN Uganda IPO, our space had a huge following and a huge audience, and guys looked like they wanted to do it. But then we are yet to see the results because they're yet to come out.
I feel like it's going to be down.
You feel like it's going to be down?
Undersubscribed.
Why do you feel like it's going to be undersubscribed? And this is given the fact that, you know, we've seen how other IPOs for telcos have done. We saw what happened in Tanzania with Vodacom. Of course, we've seen how the reigning giant on the NSE did. Why do you think this one is going to be down?
Guys, we've talked about this, we've argued about this. MTN is not Safaricom. MTN Uganda is not Vodafone, guys. Yep. At least, just in my opinion. The first things first, there's been a lot of red flags, guys. and sorry about this, guys. In case you probably subscribe to the MTN IPO. It doesn't mean that necessarily the company is wrong, but I would just think it's a good one, but it's for a very long term, you know. This would take pretty much long, considering that the first thing here in this case is we need to just figure out that there was a case. And this is one thing that CMA did so wrong for me, guys. Mm-hmm. The Capital Markets Authority should have informed local investors that MTN Uganda actually had a case in the High Court of Uganda, you know, talking about the overall activity, the prospectus that the MTN IPO was issued at. So there was a bit of a problem with the valuation of MTN by a few guys, you know.
When you say and, a bit of a problem, what do you exactly mean?
Okay, I'd say like it was approved without going through the proper channels, mostly the valuation metrics for MTN UG. And guys, in case you're wondering, they took this to court. A few investors took this to court and they actually won. So it technically means CMA Uganda did not.
But then if they won, why didn't we see any action? Because everything proceeded.
Come on, they won on Friday.
Jersey.
Yeah, like on Friday last week.
Last week Friday.
Yeah.
So this should have been pertinent information that should have been rather.
I feel like the moment is when there was an issue in court, the Ugandan regulator
should have at least mentioned it.
No, they should have stopped and said there's a current issue in court. This should be stopped until everything else is resolved.
I know this question is probably a non-issue, but do you think the questions on their valuation would have had or could potentially have informed investors to think differently in terms of whether or not they wanted to participate in the IPO?
I just replied to you with another, almost a similar question.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the valuation report which they gave affected the share activity to shareholders, the subscribers?
Probably.
Exactly. So as long as there was any issue with the valuation, then there's a high possibility that we would have seen another different action altogether in this. So yeah, I still think so. And guys, in my opinion, I really think MTN Uganda, the shares, the IPO is going to be undersubscribed. There are a few things here that I know I just want to mention to you guys.
Mm-hmm.
MTN was looking to bring in at least 108,000 new shareholders. By the close of the IPO on Monday, that number was only somewhere around 61,000, 62,000. And this, most of this information will be out next week. Exactly next week, on Friday next week, when we have the results for the MTN IPO. So literally, we are seeing MTN was expecting to bring in about $250 million from the IPO.
Mm-hmm.
There is most likely with the decline in the number of targeted shareholders, looking at this, comparing this with the SCD accounts which were open, then we could in the end face a lower number from the 250 million. The concern about this would also be just how many corporate entities really invested in MTN Uganda. MTN was really doing a lot of, you know, just as you mentioned, I wouldn't call it media buying, but I would say really more looking for
mass publicity.
Exactly, mass publicity. I think MTN did a lot of activity here in Kenya, even more than they did in Uganda. I don't know about you, but literally feel like, and then the timelines as well for this IPO was pretty short. They should have put it to, at least they should have extended it to be a longer time frame, because I know they did it for about 1 month,
mm-hmm.
which I think was short, comparing that this is a time when guys were just looking at, you know, guys were looking at bringing in money, guys are looking at, you know, we were from a period where guys were seeing cash is king, where it was during the period where the COVID hit, the pandemic hit, and everybody was trying to save as much as they can. When you want to convince guys to jump into that, don't try to make guys feel like, hey, you need to jump into this or you're going to lose. Most people are coming.
So that formal thing.
Yeah, and then finally, one thing I need. I'll just tell you guys that, the basic thing that I look at MTN IPO is, unlike most of the other IPOs that we've seen, for most of these telcos, MTN's IPO was, it was more of, I wouldn't say it wasn't, I would say it wasn't really a capital driven IPO.
It was regulator driven, of course. Yeah, exactly. It's just that the company found ways to turn lemonade into lemons.
And then finally, guys, Ali, just talking about this, the same MTN CEO who actually spoke against being pushed or being driven to go public about 2 years back,
mm-hmm.
is the same guy who comes and tells you, you know what, now let us go public. I mean, they should have had a change of that guy, to be honest.
When?
Okay, Wim is good, definitely, but if Wim says that, hey, it's like telling me that I don't want to go to war, then I give you a gun and now you're the baddest guy, you're killing everybody out there.
But Felix, here's the thing, it's not like they had an option. What would have been the anti?
No, they didn't have an option.
Exactly.
But Wim had an opportunity to tell guys like, hey, I don't think this was a good idea, I'll leave.
I don't know. I feel like that would have been an extreme case. But again, that's a good debate to have offline.
Absolutely, guys. I'd really love to know your thoughts. We're just going to start about a discussion. We'll start this discussion on HISA, just about your thoughts on MTN. And we'll definitely be able to... I'll just be able to listen to your thoughts and see if you guys share with me the same opinion regarding MTN IPO. And just what you think. We can have a short poll before... That will close on Thursday evening so that we don't have guys voting after Friday. We just want to see how probably your accurate data is so you can vote and it will be totally anonymous. So you're the one who will know if you voted good or no.
Right. I think what I'm really curious again, the results of the IPO are yet to come out. Hamisi, you participated?
Not quite.
Not quite.
I just enjoyed
it. You only invest in
crypto. I enjoyed it. Yeah. I was simply enjoying their media activity.
Right.
Yeah, as they were going around creating publicity.
I think what I'm really curious is the effect of the MIPO. And I feel like that's the easiest way, or rather one of the ways that's going to
manifest. That's a game changer.
That's a game changer, exactly. And you know what? Why don't we have that on the LSE?
Come on, we can have that here.
Why can't we have that here?
We can't have that here because of CDSC. So, okay, first of all, guys, just in case you're wondering what an MIPO is, for MTN Uganda, guys had an opportunity to actually open an account or to set up an SCD account in Uganda just by dialing a short code. So, and the main reason why this was very possible is for the guys who have registered for SIM cards in Uganda, guys go through biometric and passport and everything else.
Really? Biometric?
Yeah.
And passport?
Yeah.
So you can't register dead people in Uganda than you do in Kenya?
You can't. Your passport photo has to be taken and you have to key in your biometric. So by the time when the registration bureau is looking at your phone number, they can actually confirm it's Rollins who's setting up the account and everything else goes through because they know that Rollins is the one who set up this line. It was his biometrics, which definitely matched the registration bureau data. I had a friend who said they went to Uganda and it took them 2 hours to open, to get a SIM card. I'm like,
what?
Guys, I would go to Safaricom shop and...
Safaricom shop. Buy some archives.
There's people walking around with free lines and you just buy airtime and you have yourself a SIM card.
Okay. Tembea Kenya, I need to walk.
Clearly. But really, that's actually the one thing that that's kept me holding my breath with regards to the MTN IPO. And given that I know the MTN debuted with the Ugandan Securities Exchange, I'm curious as to whether, or rather, what extent it will A, bring more retail investors, B, help other companies that would want to list in the Ugandan market. Because I think this is going to
be the way. But then, you know, one of the things is MIPO is very good for local investors.
Yeah, it's only for local investors.
For us, it's not available for investors. It's technically nothing to us.
Yeah, but then I feel like it's that writing on the wall, guys. But Felix, you said something about the CDC. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Okay, guys. So here, let me tell you guys one thing. So I. First of all, my background is in investment banking. And so, guys, this is what used to happen previously.
Cancellation my background. Yes.
Yeah, I had to, bro. So what really used to happen previously is you used to come to your broker, they fill in your details and they set up the account for you. And that was close to within 10 to 15 minutes, you'd have your CDSC account ready. Mm-hmm. And then in mid-2019, CDSC moved the systems from the Oracle-based system to a new provider. And what happened next year is now brokers have to fill in your forms, or you have to fill in the forms, send them to the broker, and then the broker takes them to CDSC. Can you imagine that?
I can.
So that is why nowadays, from the 10 to 15 minutes that used to be there for setting up your CDSC account, I can assure you, Ali, you might take your form to the broker and it will take them no less than 24 hours to set up your CDSC account. That technically means if you wanted to open your CDSC account today to trade in stocks on the Nairobi Securities Exchange, it would actually, if you wanted, you know, you've seen that very hot stock.
Mm-hmm.
or you have inside information, guys. Yeah, guys have inside information. You have inside information here. You probably want to buy NBV, like though it's been rallying like some hot.
I'd like to clarify that his side does not associate itself with whatever statements that are coming from his side of
no,
the table.
No, guys, exactly. Yeah. Just as I
also, Mwakaneno is not part of this.
No, this is just my opinion, guys. But okay, this is just an example. It's not really my opinion,
mm-hmm.
but just an example. If you've seen some hot stock and you want to jump into it, what happens next idea? You want to set up your CDSC account, you buy it. An example is if you wanted to buy Kenjan yesterday before the results were released. But if you wanted to buy, say, like home housing finance, you know, HF Group or any other company.
So that instantaneous reaction to the market is really
I set up, and guys, I won't lie to you guys, I set up my account. I didn't participate in the MTN IPO, but then I set up my account and then I picked up everything. Like I submitted my details and everything else. And you know, I got my SCB account in less than 20 minutes.
Wow.
On my mail. I didn't even have to go to a broker. This is what the NSE should...
The one good thing coming out of Uganda.
The one thing from Uganda, guys. I'm disappointed at the NSE. Disappointed.
Life, Felix, life.
Yeah, and Jeff, in case you're listening, disappointed at you guys.
Jeff was still buddies. KQ, what do you guys think about the strategic partnership between Kenya Airways and South African Airways?
I guess I'd let you.
And also, I'm just going to say this out loud. My brother's from South Africa. The way you look at our guy when he came there is not the way he is. We know his real face. Moving on.
Looking at KQ and South African Airways, their intentions are to increase the passenger traffic. So how exactly they do this is by having a Pan-African system. So I don't know how exactly this will pan out, considering Kenyans and KQ. Kenyans' view of KQ is a bit, you know, on the negative.
But have you looked at
South African Airways? It's not just about looking. Do you guys know that South African Airways actually shut down completely without airlines, without any flight?
Zero.
South African Airlines.
Not.
Ali, you saw that video and they were doing the low flyby?
No, I missed that one.
Jeez. I mean, why are we even partnering with South African Airways? Just to be honest, guys, how do we even start partnering with a company like SAA?
KQ itself is in problems, so...
It's like two dead cows trying to hold each other. They're going to hold it stronger. No, it's not going to happen, guys.
I do not know.
It's a matter of what exactly do they have in mind that we don't know, that we haven't seen.
But seriously, I'm assuming that this partnership is not out of any ignorance or malicious intent.
There has to be some reason that really...
What is it? That's what I'm wondering.
That's what everyone's trying to find out.
Honestly, guys, I don't see anything here. Kenya Airways and South African Airways. So guys, in case you're wondering, this is what happened. So KQ and SAA said that they were looking at establishing a regional airline, that's an African airline, by 2023. And so whatever that the two countries actually signed, or the two companies, was to bring in more in terms of a Pan-African carrier. So they were trying to develop a strategic, which I think is more of a random partnership framework, not strategic,
mm-hmm.
In this case. And I really think that this would be a really huge challenge for the two companies, because all the two companies have been making huge losses. Last year alone, we saw KQ post a loss of about 11.49 billion, and this has been in terms of, you know, by generally you've seen KQ really try to cut costs, but still the same issues have really been persistent for the company. So in my opinion, I really think this won't be anything to be scared of. Kenya Airways should be more scared about regional liners really trying to jump back into its space. We've seen companies like Tanzanian Airways. I know, Ali, this is something you're going to touch about, but I mean, we've seen Tanzanian Airways, we've seen Fly Ethiopian, which has really taken quite some time to jump into this space.
Right.
it's a really, really huge challenge. At least in my personal opinion, this would be a downer for for the two countries. I mean, the strategic partner that we need at this time is somebody who's already into profitability, who can be able to hold us up.
Or you think Ethiopian Airlines would be down for that?
Ethiopian. No, why would they? Why would they?
Definitely take? Not Ethiopian, but guys,
Rwandan.
We can touch with Ugandan Airlines, you know. Guys, Ugandan Airlines has two Airbuses. They bought two Airbus, the Neo, the, you know. Come on.
But
no,
Felix,
like, what do you guys think about Uganda?
Felix and Uganda.
Felix, here's the thing. I'm happy you've actually mentioned African Airlines, because when they announced the partnership, what the two parties said was this was a step towards co-starting a Pan-African airline group in the next two years.
Do they even have the cost?
Individually.
They've talked about the cost. Do they have the funds to really support the cost in which they want to? I mean, these are companies.
Our guy's coming from bankruptcy. South Africa is just coming from bankruptcy.
I think it's a joke.
I feel like the idea of a Pan-African airline is good.
No, the idea,
execution.
The idea itself, it's perfect.
And the resources.
And remember, I think way back during a show for We Curious, remember we talked about this and we mentioned that. One of the things that is really interesting, Ali, is it would be interesting to see each African country really just, you know, jump into its strengths.
Mm-hmm.
Where we're seeing countries really stop competing against each other, but to bring in
work together.
Exactly. So that would be something where we're seeing things that jump in more in terms of Pan-Africanism, where we're seeing the airline industry being dominated by Ethiopian, but it's supporting the entire African continent at very stable prices, not so that. You know, the challenge we've seen with Africa is where if a country or if a region is strong at one point, they definitely take advantage of other areas by putting higher prices or something like that. So it would be more of where one is there, but the other smaller airlines would just be able to complement it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like the way we've seen Jumbojet do to KQ. It's never really seen as a competition between the two of them. And in case if you're wondering, Jumbojet is actually a subsidiary of KQ.
It's doing awfully well.
It's doing awesome.
But I'm actually happy that you mentioned.
Guys, please, I hope Jumbojet is not being dragged into this mess with KQ. We don't want to start flying Jumbojet all the way to Johannesburg. I mean, we don't want to be in those.
Do you have any
is there a war you have that, that we don't
say,
know about?
I was just about to say tabs, but sorry about that, guys.
No, I'm happy. Here's the thing. You mentioned
turbines.
No, Tanzania. Felix, you mentioned Tanzania. And there's a reaction earlier with regards to the partnership between KQ and South African Airlines. And someone from the Tanzania Air Operators Association, actually the executive secretary, Latifa Saik, said that, you know what? Maybe Tanzania should watch out for that too. And perhaps if this should work, Tanzania should consider emulating it and maybe partnering with another formidable player
like Uganda
Airlines.
Uganda can actually partner with Tanzania. We've seen Uganda drop Kenya out of opportunities and pick Tanzania.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Uganda betrayed us and went the pipeline route to Tanzania. Very sad. Very sad indeed, guys. But I think there are other players within this area that have jumped in and have proven to be very, very efficient. We've seen countries like Rwanda. The Rwanda has weirdly been doing very awesome. And Rwanda has been signing a lot of code share agreement. We're seeing them jumping into various zones as well. I think just the other day, early this year, they started a competition of a route with KQ,
mm-hmm.
where they're flying to Hwanzu through Nairobi. You know how weird that is?
No.
Because Kenya Airways recently told its pilots
to fly from Nairobi to Hwanzu.
No, KQ has been flying to Hwanzu for a very long time.
Right.
But I don't know if it's because Rwanda Air had jumped into the Nairobi Hwanzu route, because KQ told its crew to actually fly faster, whatever that means. And I've seen this meme where guys are telling Captain Koki to kanyaga your dreamliner. I'm like,
Maybe I've just seen videos with Matatu background music. Oh. It's disturbing.
No, it's because KQ was actually telling its KQ told its pilots to
make faster flights.
To fly faster. They're saying that because there are various international regulations that guide passenger airlines, and KQ was telling the pilots that, hey, you know what, this is a contract that you've signed with Kenya Airways and not the international bodies. And so they're telling pilots to go beyond. I think it's about, I'm not mileage, guys. I'm not a pilot, so yeah. Nikama, you've been told to 80 kilometers per hour, and then all
just,
of a sudden
just you've... cut the story straight. Sema to KQ wanasema kama matatu za
Rongai.
Very, very relatable.
Straightforward.
I don't know. This is a podcast we did with IATA, and I'm curious to see how this partnership and if or should it trigger another partnership in the region. So maybe Air Tanzania and some regional player, what this would mean for the single African air transport market, because that's something that IATA has really, really been pushing in the continent.
I mean, we'll have to see. My main question now would really be, and my curious cut would be, is KQ going to take advantage of the issues in Ethiopia and jump back into this? Into this
by
market?
The way.
So do you think I feel like with Ethiopian issues, we have there's a lot to solve in KQ.
First of all, we definitely don't have enough aircrafts. You know, most of our aircrafts are actually on lease.
Right.
Yeah, so we... Oh, guys, and even the Dreamliners...
What are
the
8?
The 8 Bob and
9 Bob. But if you want to take 3K. Yeah, Zilezani, okay.
Back to the story.
Guys, I think those aircrafts might have been bought by the Ugandan government.
Felix at Uganda today.
Moving on. Guys, this week this is unconfirmed. I have not talked to anyone in Safaricom. But then what do you guys think about ads on the M-Pesa app, yeah or nay?
It would be work, it would be bad, but it would be good for revenue for Safaricom.
As always, I'm on the tech side of things. So for myself, I see their side of...
And somebody
why
who works
within advertising,
how is this
yeah.
possible?
Just as you download the app, you usually accept to some terms and conditions, and you give them some permissions.
One of them is in-app ads.
Yeah, they have a lot of your data, and what they / we do is we use that data to offer you products that you actually need.
Come to think about it, an ad inside the M-Pesa app could trigger you to view the product
and buy,
then purchase
almost
and then guess how you're going to pay.
Just M-Pesa.
It's literally they just did the reverse process.
You're just going
to. I think it's genius. I'd be very uncomfortable.
Yes.
I do not like pop-ups or any other things when I'm doing transactions.
Like I actually have modded apps because we can't have
that. Avoid ads. I think
they'll
find a way to make it integrated into the app so that you don't actually feel the annoyance of pop-ups and stuff like that.
There's their bundle stuff.
There's their bundles. You don't usually
the
notice.
Rolling
yeah,
banner.
The banners they usually have, and you don't usually notice that.
Fam.
It's part of it. So
if it becomes too much, I'm just gonna move down to SDK.
Sooner rather than later, you're just going to be buying stuff because you're.
No,
in
the I think we can just move back to the SDK. I mean, we were living with SDK very comfortably before this jumper.
So you're going
but
to SDK just so
that
you don't spend money.
Because of utilities is that the challenge with the utility that jumps into all this is that. You know,
these conveniences that the
companies
app gives.
Jump in and create a utility value in all of this,
and
then it just stopped. There's a way when you get to jump into, there's a way when you do an efficiency bit, it kills. It's like Kenya Power coming and connecting you with electricity, and then all of a sudden you want to say you want to jump back into candles.
Yeah, that
you know,
doesn't work.
Like
that's the thing,
yes,
they've already caught you.
I mean, yes, you have an opportunity to jump back into
back
candles,
but you won't do it.
What you want?
Hear me out. This is what I think. First of all, Safaricom has two apps for M-Pesa, at least for a customer.
Mm-hmm.
No, I do not know about the rest.
There's the M-Pesa Super app. And then
no, there's the M-Pesa
Safari.
Super app, which is the M-Pesa app. And
then
there's
the
My
Safaricom
app. Okay. I like how the M-Pesa app is
tuned.
It's tuned.
Yeah.
It's the interface is smooth.
Mm-hmm.
The completing a transaction takes me under 10 seconds. That's back to back. And I usually use, Safaricom should pay me for this. I usually use fingerprint verification so that the clicking is
the validation. And actually right now there's an update that came in earlier today,
mm-hmm.
where you no longer need to use your biometrics. It's the login opt-out. So the only time you key in, so you can go into the super app without any biometrics.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the point when you key in all the other stuff, so confirming your PIN and everything, is when you want to check your balances,
mm-hmm.
or you want to now confirm a transaction.
Yeah, that's when you use your biometrics.
Yeah.
But then so what I'm trying to say is I usually use my biometrics to sort of approve transactions, forget the login. And for me, that makes it significantly fast. And it feels safer in public when I don't want people to see my
Mpesa thing. Your number,
I like my 2 bob where it is, you know?
It's only 2 bob.
In my Mpesa?
Pretty much.
Is it 2 Ugandan shillings?
Mpesa.
Oh, why would I have Ugandan shillings in an
Mpesa account?
Oh, guys, by the way, guys, I usually joke about this, but trust you guys, I have 2,000 Ugandan shillings in my wallet at all times.
Mans is holding their
I've
government.
I've had that for the past 3 years. 2,000 Ugandan shillings.
You are running the economy. You can see that.
I mean, like, the 2,000
the economy survives on
you. I can go to the border and...
I'd like to clarify that 63 shillings and 18 cents. That's Chapo Smoky. In select neighborhood.
Mans is holding Uganda's economy.
Yes, I'm holding Uganda's economy here. 2,000 Ugandan shillings.
Circulation.
Just in case I'm ever arrested, I can talk to the Ugandan police. I don't know if they take 2,000 shillings though.
Anyway, Felix, I'm happy that got us excited. Let's take it up a regional note,
mm-hmm.
Or maybe a global note. Uber.
Mm-hmm.
Felix, before we actually get to the real news, happened with the Uber results? I think it's something that we mentioned, you actually mentioned in Markets Monday, but then before I get to the exciting bit, I'd like, let's talk about this talk.
Alright guys, so Uber has been on the rise, in case you're wondering. Uber closed the other day, Uber Technologies closed the other day, it was down about 5%, but mm-hmm. if you look at Uber in terms of, okay, it's been down guys, it's not been on the gaining side. Is bad.
It's been red.
In terms of year to date, Uber has been down 17.7%. The 6 month performance is 17.68%. The 1 month performance for Uber is 8.56%.
Mm-hmm.
And the 5 day, that is over the past few days, Uber has been down 5.5%. And also, on Uber alone, today alone, I'm seeing it's also on the decline. On the day when Uber apparently announced the announcement that Ali is going to talk about, it actually dropped all the way.
Dropped?
After close, yes. Dropped all the way down.
Hey, what's up with your investors, Bunny? You guys...
Come on.
I mean, Amma, when they go high, you go low.
Okay, maybe first, Ali, you need to tell guys what Uber is bringing.
Right. Guys.
Maybe we should have started with this.
Markets first. You know, we are Hisa and all the good stuff. Uber is making its first foray into the marijuana market.
At last. It's more of an Atlas.
In simple terms, guys, Uber is delivering weed.
Well, let me clarify. First of all, Uber will start as usual. The rollout will begin in the global north, so Canada and the US. And let me tell you something: you will not be able to VPN your way through this. Spotify.
It's very weird. I know a few guys within this room who would actually be able to VPN. Yeah, Uber delivery.
Talk to me directly.
If you want to talk to me.
Anyway, so they're going to be delivering marijuana products via the Uber Eats app. And of course, you're going to be required to confirm your legal age and everything before you sort of access this service.
So I think it's pretty much interesting, Ali.
It's actually delivery in an hour. So if you're out there in the world where marijuana is legal and your pedi takes more than 1 hour, maybe in the near future you might be able to Uber Eats your way through this.
You know, Ali...
Marijuana deliverable.
Okay. Marijuana edibles on Uber Eats. I'll just give you guys the figures. The cannabis business in Canada is currently worth about $5 billion. This is, you know, we're looking at this as a growth in terms of year on year, where just a few years ago this was valued way lower, just something below about $3 billion, Canadian dollars. Now it's already up, and the lockdown seemed to have caused a bit of a rise in uptake.
Mm-hmm.
For cannabis, and so Uber Eats is jumping onto this. But then there are a few things that Uber Eats is also putting into place. First of all, is verification of ID.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen this really happen even with the local apps. An example is if you were to order, and I know Glovo really implemented this, where if you were to order, I don't know if they still implement this, but if you were to order wine or if you were to order any alcoholics on alcoholic stuff on Glovo, when the rider gets to your place, they would ask you to give them the ID because they need to key in your identity number, your date of birth.
Oh, right.
From your ID before they can be able to verify, to close that delivery. I don't know if they still do that though, but that is one thing that I know they put that up some time back. And so this is just an important bit. So all of this, the big question would really be on how Uber would be able to sign up the producers. And there's a lot of case study in this, because remember, Ali, we also have a lot of illegal marijuana producers globally.
Yes.
And Canada has one of the highest illegal producers of marijuana. Just in case guys were thinking that Canada is better than Uganda in this case, nope. We still have, I believe Museveni has controlled.
I don't know what Canadians living in Uganda feel. Oh, sorry, Ugandans living in Canada with regards to your comments.
Exactly. Like, so we're seeing the Canadian business really, it's going to jump in through. The main concerns would be, just to what level will Uber really do to, you know, onboard the legal or the licensed marijuana dealers in Canada?
I'm happy you brought that up, actually, because Uber is partnering with Tokyo Smoke, which is
a cannabis company.
It's a cannabis retailer in
Canada.
In Canada, so that is one of the ways they're trying to sort of work around the large number of illegal producers. And again, they're watching the opportunities evolve, because I'm sure this could bring, could trigger public sentiment, and that might or might not influence regulation, or at least how they look at it. So it's one of those spaces that's there to watch. But then this is what I like about the concept, yes? So Uber delivers you your stuff, you get munchies, and then Uber Eats brings you food.
Profit.
Guys,
profit.
You hear the name that
profit
guys call this? Munchies.
Right.
You've learned something new.
They create a problem and then they solve it. All within the ecosystem.
Yeah. So like Ali, imagine your Uber guy is doing a delivery and then you're like, hey,
first
you know
of
what,
all, I'm in
you know
Kenya.
What?
Second of all, I don't do drugs.
No, like literally somebody could, you know, like somebody would say like, hey, so you've ordered something from Tokyo Smoke, it's your Uber ride, I'm on the way. And you'll be like, yeah, please pass by the McDonald's store and bring me
something.
Right,
yeah.
I'm definitely going to be hungry after.
Yeah.
For sure. I think that's the same thing that M-Pesa's Safaricom is doing. Having you on the M-Pesa app and seeing ads,
I thought you were saying Safaricom and cannabis.
Wow.
I didn't see that one.
You're wondering, Safaricom and cannabis. We're having those in the same sentence. Okay.
Both green, right?
Oh, yeah, by the way.
Yes. I think this is all we had for today. But before we close, Felix,
uh-huh.
Markets Monday, what are we expecting?
First of all, just more about Kenjin. Another thing is we've seen a lot of companies read, oh, guys, Ali, we've not spoken about something. Let me just bring it back in.
Oh,
and
my God.
The Asset Recovery Agency today froze the account of the 21-year-old female.
Ooh, 100.
Who had 102 million.
Million? I even forgot to mention that. That's like the first thing that's been on my mind.
The lady's name is Felista Nyamathiran Njoroge. And yes, 102 million in her account. All she can do is watch. All she can do is watch. It's so sad.
How long is it? 6 months?
No, they have to. It's until they get to an agreement. So this agreement is the Asset Recovery Agencies would, you know, acquire those funds and say
acquire.
Yeah, okay. Recover.
I would shake.
Let me just say, okay, I'd say acquire because it's not a recovery.
The one or two.
No, because Ali, you know, one of the things here is that it's not a recovery, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like this is any stolen funds from the government.
It's just clarity on the sources and
yes.
everything.
And if you look at this, guys, At times, it's so easy to deal with regulators. There are lots of things that this lady would have done to ensure,
the
safety of her funds. Yeah. And she did not do that. She went against... And guys, I know a lot of guys would disagree with me onto this, but there are a lot of paperwork that she didn't do correctly. She only indicated the funds as from my boyfriend. So anything else that she was being asked was from my boyfriend. Nobody denies that the funds were from her boyfriend. But so, there are lots of things within the Money Laundering Act. First of all, is you need to clarify if these are proceeds of crime. And proceeds of crime doesn't necessarily mean that the lady must have been involved or might have been involved in a crime.
Yeah.
It's as simple as knowing if the gentleman had legit money. Because you'd imagine if the gentleman killed somebody else or killed, you know, probably attacked planet Zeus and got all the gold from the planet and
Felix. Felix, hear me out. What do we have on the side of the asset recovery guys in terms of verifying independently, apart from telling telling you to pinky swear this money is legit? Swear,
this is,
What really happens
like, is what exactly do they
the
do?
Documentation, you know, the documentation bit when it gets to ARA, it's, and just not only on ARA, to any bank, the documentation bit is very high. The first thing here is you'll be told to show the source of your money. And let me tell you, Ali, I have met guys who were asked with Central Bank of Kenya to provide 10 years worth of bank statements just because of a 1 million shilling transaction that they did.
That's atrocious. I'm sorry, that sounds too much.
Yeah, like it sounds too much, but let me just tell you just to what level it does. If as long as you've been flagged, your account has been flagged by the Financial Crimes Unit, come on, man.
It's frozen going to and be it's just going
like,
to
like, it's going to show up it's somewhere. And hectic. If you mention that this is from my salary, then, you
then they have to follow up.
Now they're going to audit your salary. If you mention that this is from your savings,
they're gonna
you can start to audit your savings. Where
my
did,
little
M-Pesa
challenge
from?
Ending ended. Yeah.
So literally, guys, I think that's one thing that guys would jump into. So the audit phrase of just the AML laws globally are hard. We saw the other day when countries that have not been good in money laundering, countries like Turkey, were put onto the EU's, to the global grey list for financial crimes, just because they're not tough on the money laundering. And guys, in case you're wondering, if you want to launder your money apart from Cyprus and Virgin Islands, and British Islands, the one thing that you can actually get is Turkey.
Felix, where are you going with this?
Wow, good knowledge. Share more, share more.
We share investment.
Yeah, just keep going. I see you know a lot.
Okay, guys, money laundering is illegal, guys, just in case you're wondering.
Right, yes.
As you were saying.
We talked about marijuana in the podcast. That's enough.
Yeah, okay, so just to jump in a bit on what this would happen for this lady is now she needs to come in because, you know, ARA invited her and told her, come and tell us the source of your wealth. That's all.
So,
you know,
what options does
she
have
income.
In terms of...
Rather, she went to the lawyers and the lawyers said their client is out of the country. So, literally...
She just has to sort it out with
the ARA. So, literally what the ARA is telling them is, you know what? Let your client come back from outside the country and then...
And justify. Okay.
Yeah. So, once they talk, maybe they can come back. They can probably jump in and bring... what's his name? The
billionaire.
And then they'll bring him in and he can bring his BTC statement. If he sold it on Coinbase, if he sold it on Mt. Gox, he can say this was from Mt. Gox and this is the statement. He can access it. I sold this Bitcoin and this is the money that came into my account.
Right.
Just that way. It's so clear. When the two of them come in together, they'll manage to clear this up. But if they still want to play ping-pong with the government and the regulator, this money is going to sit in some soft account. It's going to be earning some interest, some non-funded income.
And the babe won't get soft life out of it.
Exactly.
She's going to watch it.
Yeah.
Right.
Watch your money grow.
Anyway, guys, that's going to be the end of this podcast. There's a lot of good things coming. First things first, if you haven't read the HISA newsletter, what the hell? In the HISA newsletter, one of the things that really stood out for me was the case of Apple versus Pegasus. And that's definitely something that you might want to read from the newsletter. If you don't have it, just go to
hisa.substack.com. That's hisa.substack.com.
Second thing second, this and many other amazing podcasts out there are brought to you by HISA. HISA is the coolest app for getting news with what's happening in the market and tracking your favorite stocks in the Nairobi Stock Exchange. And
very
soon enough,
soon.
Global stocks.
Coming soon.
You know, I have the beta mode, but then because of NDS, I can't tell you what's in there. But guess what? A lot of good things coming. Download HISA app on Google Play Store and Apple App Store. Third thing is that make sure that you follow the Kenyan Wall Street podcast on Spotify or wherever you listen to. My name is Ali Mwakaneno. I was your host. And this show is co-hosted by
Felix Ochieng, your usual guy on Mondays, Fridays, and every other day on pod.
Have a lovely weekend.